नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अपद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं तदाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्री गुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे।
Before we end the class, you can just and collect last week's papers, and also those who have not got the notes which we distributed last week, and whole 11 kind of notes. If anybody has not got, you can give your names also, that will keep it ready next week. And so we will also be starting the. We'll spend 5 minutes for recitation of the verses. So next week I'll distribute the shloka sheet, but for the now, today itself we'll start, but I'll just tell you the verses which we can recite so that we can start today itself instead of waiting next week. So, 11th canto, today we'll recite, you can note down these verses, and as well we can start today. Sixth chapter, 12th verse, 12th verse, 44, 46, in the 17th chapter, sorry, 7th chapter, 7th chapter, verse number 17 and 18, and we'll also recite verse number, verse number 20. So these verses we'll recite today. We'll recite each verse once, and then we'll recite each of the verse two times. First we'll recite all the verses, each verse we'll recite two times, and then we'll go to the next verse. So 12, 19,
can you repeat?
6th chapter, 12, 19, and what is the other 44, 46, 17, 18 and 20. 7 chapter, 17, 18 and 20. So we will recite together so that it will be faster. 12th verse.
Pariyushtaya tava vibho vanamalayeyam samsvardini bhagavati pratipatni vachri yagasu pranitamamuya dhanamadadanno bhuya sadangriya subhashayadu maketu pariyushtaya tava vibho vanamalayeyam samsvardini bhagavati pratipatni vachri yasu pranitamamuya dhanamadadanno bhuya sadangriya subhashayadu maketu.
19th verse.
Vibhyastavamrutakato davahastrilokya padavaneja sarita shamalani hantum anushravam shutivirang riyamanga sangai tirtadvayam shuchishadastavupasrishanti vibhyastavamrutakato davahastrilokya padavaneja sarita shamalani hantum anushravam shrutivirang nirjamanga sangai tirtadvayam shrutishadastavupasrishanti.
44th verse, 44 and 46. 44.
Tava vikriditam Krishna nam paramamangalam karanapiyusham asadhya tyajantyanyasrutam jana tava vikriditam Krishna nam paramamangalam karanapiyusham asadhya tyajantyanyasrutam jana.
46.
Tvayopagupta sravganda vasolankara charchita uchishta bhojino dasa tava mayam jaye mani tvayopagupta sravganda vasolankara charchita uchishta bhojino dasa tava mayam jaye mani.
17th verse of the 7th chapter.
Satyasya te swadrisha atmana atmanonyam vaktaramisha vibhude shvabhinana chakshe sarve vimohita dayastavamaya yeme brahmadayastanubhrito vahiratta bhava satyasya te swadrisha atmana atmanonyam vaktaramisha vibhudeshvapinanu chakshe sarve vimohita dhiyastava mayayene yaskanubhuto harirata bhava.
18th verse.
Tasmad bhavanta manavadya manantaparam sarvadya vishwaram akunta vikunta dishnyam nirvinna diraham vevrjinavitapto narayanam narasakam sharanam prapadye. Tasmad bhavanta manavadya manantaparam sarvagya vishwaramakunta vikunta dishyam nirvinna dirahamave vrjinavitapto narayanam narasakam sharanam prapadye.
20th verse.
Atmano guru ratmaiva purushasya visheshatah yat pratyakshanumanabhyam shreyo savanu vindate. Atmano guru ratmaiva purushasya visheshatah yat pratyakshanumanabhyam shreyo savanu vindate.
So last week we discussed it in the 6th verse. So Uddhava, after hearing Lord Krishna speaking to all the residents of Yadu dynasty, all the residents of Dwarka, telling them to go to Prabhasa Kshetra to atone for the offense committed to the Brahmanas. And Uddhava heard this. So Uddhava could understand that Lord Krishna is preparing to leave this world, disappear from this world and go to the spiritual world. Because one thing is that he gives two reasons. One reason is that because Krishna, seeing Krishna's lotus feet is the greatest pious activity. There cannot be any greater pious activity performed. There cannot be a greater pious activity by going to a holy place than by seeing the Lord's lotus feet. And secondly, Krishna has the power to counter curse. He has the power to actually nullify the effect of the curse committed by the Brahmanas, pronounced by the Brahmanas. So therefore, since Krishna is not doing that, so Uddhava is actually understanding that Krishna is preparing to disappear from this world and go to the spiritual world. So therefore Uddhava approaches Krishna, and then because of not being able to tolerate the imminent separation from Krishna, he approaches Krishna and he is requesting him to actually take him along with him. Then Krishna starts speaking from the 7th chapter. So first Krishna actually confirms to Uddhava about what he actually thought, that how Krishna, that he is planning to go to the spiritual world. He confirms that, and then he says that I have completed my mission here, and now due to the curse of the Brahmanas curse, Yadu dynasty will certainly perish by fighting among themselves. On the 7th day from now onwards, the city of Dwaraka will be inundated. And then he mentioned that I will also abandon the earth in the very near future, and the earth will be bereft of all piety in my disappearance. And then Krishna says that you must not remain in the earth any longer after I abandon the earth. And then Krishna instructs in the 6th verse, you should give up all attachment to your personal friends, and you should fix your mind upon me, and being always conscious of me, you should wander throughout the earth. This is the instruction which Krishna gives in the 6th verse. So now we will start from the 7th verse. Yad idam manasa vacha,
yad idam manasa vacha,
chakshurbhyam shravanadibhi,
chakshurbhyam shravanadibhi,
Nashvaram grihyamanam cha,
Nashvaram grihyamanam cha,
Viddhi maya manomayam,
Viddhi maya manomayam.
that we perceive, either mind, speech, eyes, ears and other senses, is an illusory creation that one imagines to be real due to the influence of Maya. In fact, you should know that all of the objects of the material senses are temporary.
So in the previous verse, Krishna told Uddhava to give up all attachment, your personal friends and relatives. So Vishnu Chakravartakur mentions one comment on that. So he says that there are two types of affection to the relatives. One is the affection based on one's own body, and the other is affection for them based on relationship with Krishna. So when Krishna is telling Uddhava to give up the attachment towards the relatives, he is actually telling the affection which is based on one's own body, not the affection which is based on in relationship with Krishna. So in fact, Krishna Chakravartakur says the second cannot be given up. It is impossible for you to do so, and you will not be criticized for giving up the second type of affection, because the second type of affection is based on relationship with me. So now the sixth verse, Krishna told Uddhava to have equal disposition towards others. Now the seventh verse is explaining that equal vision which he mentioned in the previous verse. So he says, Yad idam manasa vacha chakshurbhyam shravanadibhihi. The material universe which you perceive with your eyes, mind, speech and other senses, it is a temporary creation, nashwaram. It can be destroyed any time. It is a temporary creation, and that is equivalent to what is made of Maya. So what Krishna is saying is that whatever you see in this world, whatever you perceive with your eyes or ears or any other senses, you must understand that everything is only a creation of Maya, because all these things are temporary. And whatever you perceive when you are awake, you must understand that it is simply made of Maya. And whatever you perceive when you are sleeping, it is made of mind. Based on what you see during the day, the mind creates different impressions. So mind gives those impressions during the during the dream when you are asleep. So here basically Krishna is telling Uddhava to have an equal disposition, in the sense that you must understand everything is temporary. So when we actually talk, like if you see in the scriptures many times this concept of having equal disposition comes, like many places in the Gita, in the Uddhava Gita, many places in the Bhagavatam, one should have equal disposition towards others. Vidya Vinay Sampanne Brahmane Kavyasini Shuni Chaiva Svake Chapanne, some other, like that it comes. So when we talk about equal disposition does not mean identical action. Just like, for example, a doctor, he has to have equal disposition, but that does not mean that he performs identical action towards everyone. So somebody who is diseased, the doctor actually treats the patient by performing a surgery. But some other doctor who is his colleague, he has an equal disposition towards anyone who is diseased. But then somebody else who is some other doctor or a nurse or another ward boy or something, he may have friendship with those persons because they are actually helping him to actually cure the disease. So equal disposition does not mean identical action. And sometimes in the Gita, Krishna says that one should see gold and stone equally. Samaloshtashma kanchanale. One should see the gold and stone equally. So sometimes one may say, these things actually appear very impractical. So when we talk about equal disposition, we can understand in three levels. One is on the detached material level. detached to the material level means, and even on a material level, even if a person does not have any understanding about the soul or the Supreme Lord, even on a material level, if a person contemplates, he can understand the relative nature of different things. Like for example, like some particular cloth, it is because it is dubbed as it is actually fashionable to wear such clothes, the cost of the price of the clothes is high. But the same clothes after some time, after some years, it may not be actually even very cheap. So it's very relative. Like some sports, maybe football may be famous in say Brazil, but it may not be famous in some other country, it may not be so famous in India as it is in famous in Brazil or something. But cricket is famous in India, but then it's not famous in Brazil. So it's a, even on a material level, when you see the relative nature of different things, you can have an equal disposition without any understanding of the soul. When for the sake of currency note also, now a particular say 100 rupees may have certain value, but after 10 years the 100 rupees may not have much value. And this is on a detached material level, and another is on a detached spiritual level, on the level of the soul. The person understands that he is not the body and he is the soul. So then a person have equal disposition with understanding that anything material cannot satisfy the soul. Ultimately, I am spiritual in nature, so matter cannot satisfy me. So a person can have equal disposition towards everything. And then the third level in which a person has equal disposition is that when a person not only understands that he is not the body, he is the soul, but a person understands that when a person understands that he is actually eternal servant of the Lord. So when a person understands this constitutional position, then a person may see stone as if it is gold, if that stone can be used in the service of the Lord's temple. Or he may see the gold as if it is a stone, if it is going to distract him from actually getting allured. In that sense, one can have equal disposition even on the material level, and with the understanding of not the body, even the soul, and even when a person understands that he is eternal servant of the Lord. And of course, another thing, when we talk about equal disposition, sometimes we think that when a person has equal disposition, that means a person will become free from all the emotions, he becomes like a stone. No, that is not the kind of equal disposition which Krishna talks about. So when Krishna says equal disposition, the kind of equal disposition, it actually enriches one's emotions spiritually. After hearing the Gita, Arjuna was definitely crying when his son died, Abhimanyu. So, that sense. So here, Kriyan Maharaj talks about, in the purport he talks about that when a person has desire to exploit matter, then he comes under the three modes. And when a person comes under the three modes, then he gets captivated by different isms, different kinds of philosophy like socialism, altruism, communism, etc. And then a person is absorbed in the experience of combining the senses with the sense objects. So in this way, a person actually goes through different stages. So we'll go to the next verse. Pumso ayuktasya nanarto.
Pumso ayuktasya nanarto.
Brahmasa guna dosha bhag.
Brahmasa guna dosha bhag.
Karma akarma vikarmeti.
Karma akarma vikarmeti.
Guna dosha diyo bida.
Guna dosha diyo bida.
One whose consciousness is divided by you one engages constantly on the platform of material good and evil and is bound by such conceptions. Absorbed in material duality, such a person contemplates the performance of compulsory duties, non-performance of such duties, and performance of forbidden activities.
So here, in this verse, Krishna explains the previous verse. That the previous verse he talked about whatever we perceive with different senses is actually temporary. So in this verse he explains the illusory mental platform of existence. So he says, Pumso Ayuktasya. Ayuktasya means one whose mind is diverted from the truth, or one who is disconnected from the Supreme Lord, one who does not fix his mind on the Supreme Lord. So such a person, how does a person see this world? Pumso ayuktasya nanartho brahmasa gunadoshabha. Such a person, he perceives many different meanings, nana artho. He perceives many illusory meanings with conceptions of guna and dosha, conceptions of good and bad. And then, when he thinks in terms of good and bad, guna, dosha, diyo, bida, then such a person, such an ignorant person, he sees differences in terms of prescribed actions, karma, and neglected actions, akarma, and forbidden actions, vikarma. So basically he says, one who is disconnected from the Krishna, one who is disconnected from the real truth, ayuktasya, such a person sees, he has different conceptions of good and bad. And then when a person is having this conception of good and bad, he actually distinguishes between karma, akarma and vikarma. So in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna talks about karma, akarma, vikarma. Karman akarma ya pashyet. Karman akarma ya
pashyet.
Kim karma kim akarmeti kavayo pyatra mohita tate karma pravakshyami yajnatva mokshete shubha. So Krishna talks about karma, akarma and vikarma. So there, if you see the meaning, karma means actions according to the scriptures, and vikarma is actions that are forbidden in the scriptures. But there, akarma refers to devotional service, actions performed for the pleasure of Krishna. But here, in this verse, when Krishna is speaking here, karma and vikarma have the same meaning as the meaning which he used in the Bhagavad Gita. But here, the word akarma refers to non-performance of action, non-performance of the prescribed actions according to scriptures. Or Hridayan Maharaj writes a beautiful, he puts in a nice way, he says, karma means, one who performs karma, that means one who is materially responsible. Materially responsible performs his duties according to his position in this world. And akarma means materially irresponsible. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says akarma means one who performs devotional service. Here, akarma means one who is materially irresponsible. And vikarma refers to one who is a sinful person who performs forbidden actions. So such an ignorant person sees differences in terms of prescribed actions, neglected actions and forbidden actions. So Hridayan Maharaj says that nanartho guna devasha, that means that there are so many varieties in this world. Within the world of matter, the next page, there are undoubtedly varieties. Among dogs, there are pedigree poodles and common mutts. Among horses, there are thoroughbreds and old grey mares. Similarly, some human beings are beautiful and educated and others are dull and homely. Some are rich and some are poor. In nature, we find fertile land and sterile land, lush forests and useless deserts. Like that. But all these different varieties, they do not have a permanent relationship. However, we do not have any permanent relationship with any of these varieties. So that is what Krishna is trying to say. That we do not have a permanent relationship with any of these varieties. So then he says that so how to actually achieve perfection? So he says that some conditioned souls believe that complete perfection of life may be performed by being materially responsible actions. Some people believe that perfection can be attained by being irresponsible, not doing any actions. And some people believe that perfection is achieved by sinful, by performing sinful activities. But all the conception of the ignorant people. So then he quotes this the beautiful verse spoken by Chitraketu Maharaj. So Chitraketu Maharaj, when he was cursed by Parvati Devi to become a man-eating demon, he speaks this profound verse. It says, Guna pravaha yetasmi kaha shoko kon anugraha kaha swargo naraka kova kim sukam dukkam evava. He says, Guna pravaha yetasmin. That means, in the fast flowing river of the modes of nature, in the fast flowing river of the modes of nature, what is heaven, what is hell, what is happiness and what is distress, and what is a curse and what is a benediction? But when the river is flowing fast, what you see at one moment, it just disappears in the next moment. So if you see from an eternal point of view, like our life is like a fast flowing river. So Chitraketu Maharaj is speaking this profound verse, it actually meaning, because Parvati Devi has cursed him to become a man-eating demon. If you see his Chitraketu Maharaj's life, initially he was actually he was hankering to have a son. And then Angira Rishi came and then gave him a son. And then he was in great jubilation because he got a son. And then when his son died, he was like lamenting piteously. So he was like oscillating between hankering and lamentation. And then when Narada Muni came and gave spiritual instructions to him, then he became equipoised. Like he got a hope. So then he worshipped Lord Sankarshan and then he became the king of the Vidyadhara planets. So as the king of the Vidyadhara planets, he was going in an airplane being surrounded by beautiful women, but still he was focused in glorifying the Lord. Although he was surrounded by sense objects, but he was actually so much focused in glorifying the Lord that he was not at all disturbed by that. And then when he was cursed by Parvati Devi, like previously, he only lost his son. He lost his possession, but now his whole identity was changed from being the king of the Vidyadhara planets to actually the man-eating demon. There is actually, it's a much greater cause for actually getting depressed and to lament, etc. Much greater cause for lamentation. But at that time, Chitraketu Maharaj speaks this verse because he was enlightened by the transcendental knowledge spoken by Narada Muni. And of course, so that's why, like from the material emotions of hankering and lamentation, he came to equanimity. And so he's saying that, oh, this curse and benediction, it's all actually from the point of view of eternity. It's all, it has no meaning. So then he came to equanimity, and then later when he becomes Vritrasur, then when he speaks the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, Aham Hare Tava Padaika Molo Dasanu Dasu Bhavitasmi Bhuyaha Manas Maretasu Pater Gunamsti Grihita Vakarma Karotukaya. There Chitraketu Maharaj says that, so when will that time come when I will be united with my with the great devotees of the Lord, and when will I engage in their service? Dasanu Dasu Bhavitasmi Bhuya, as a servant of the servants. So when will I go back to Godhead? Like that, he is actually speaking that in the battlefield. So this is like a spiritual emotion. Like he's expressing his hankering to go back to the spiritual world, and that too not in some peaceful forest or something, in a place, in a battlefield where people are actually people are passionate, etc. In that sense, we see the Chitraketu Maharaj's life, there is a journey from material emotions of hankering and lamentation and jubilation to come to equanimity, and from there he comes to the spiritual emotions of he expresses hankering to for the association of the Lord. So in that sense, why this verse is quoted is that when a person thinks of good and bad on the material platform, it has no meaning actually. It has no meaning. Karma and the material platform, good and bad, this is all actually temporary. Something which is good, it will be bad later. Something which is bad will become good later. And then Riyan Maharaj writes a beautiful point. So one may say that good and bad on the material platform, it has no meaning, but still Vedic scriptures themselves, they talk about good actions and forbidden actions. What about that? Because Vedic scriptures, Vedas which are emanating from the Lord, they talk about good and bad actions. So for that, Riyan Maharaj gives an explanation, the 515th page. So he says, when the Vedic scriptures talk about good and bad activities, they give these prescriptions in order to bring a person to come to the mode of goodness, to elevate a person to the mode of goodness, so that a person can ultimately transcend even the mode of goodness. So he says, coming to the mode of goodness is like coming to the airport, but purpose of coming to the airport is to catch the flight. If a person misses the flight, then coming to the airport is actually useless. So then, so that is why he also quotes these verses. Traigunya Vishaya Veda and Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. And Krishna is saying that one should actually go above the three modes. So there is a gradual path of coming to the mode of goodness and then transcending even the mode of goodness. But if a person directly takes to devotional service, then it is like a catching an elevator to go to the top floor. So in this way, Krishna is saying this verse, and we'll go to the next verse. Tasmad yuktendriya gramo,
tasmad yuktendriya gramo,
yukta chitta idam jagat,
yukta chitta idam jagat,
atmanikshasva viradam,
atmanikshasva viradam,
atmanam mayadishvare,
atmanam mayadishvare.
Therefore, bringing all your senses under control and thus subduing the mind, you should see the entire world as situated within the self, who is explained everywhere, and you should also see this individual self within me, the supreme personality of Godhead.
So here he says, therefore you should control your mind and senses. Should control your mind and senses and see the entire world, yukta chitta idam jagat, and situated within the self. And what is the nature of the self? Vitatam. Vitatam in the self is actually expanded everywhere. And then you should see that self is situated within me. Atmanam mayi adishwari. So Vishnu Chakotaku says that you should bring your senses and mind under control, and you should see the entire world as the object of enjoyment for the jivas who are expanded everywhere, and then you should see the jivas as controlled by me, Paramatma, Mayi Adishwari. So we see that always, basically Krishna is telling Uddhava not to have fragmental vision of things. When you have fragmented vision, that you see different things without any connection with the God. But in order to see everything in connection with God, you have to first control the mind and senses. Because when the mind and senses are not controlled, it is less likely to have the fragmental vision. Or whether when you control the mind and senses, then it is less likely to have the fragmental vision. So,
is it like Sutre Manigana, you know, see a common thread?
Yeah, in that sense, seeing everything in relation to the Lord. So, next verse.
Jnana-vijnana-samyukta
Atma-bhuta-sharirina Atma-bhuta-sharirina
Atmanubhava-tushtatma
Nantarayair-vihanyase
Nantarayair-vihanyase.
Being fully endowed with conclusive knowledge of the Vedas and having realized the ultimate power of such knowledge in practice, you will be able to pursue the pure self, and thus your mind will be satisfied. At that time you will become dear to all living beings headed by the demigods, and you will never be hampered by any disturbance in life.
So this is a beautiful verse. Here Krishna is explaining. The previous verse he explained that you should control your mind and senses, and you should see how everyone is situated in me. How you should see that the entire world is situated within the self, and who is actually situated within me. And when a person achieves this realization, like what is the speciality of such a person, or what is the benefit of achieving such a realization? So here he says, Jnana Vijnana Samyukta. Jnana Vijnana, when a person has knowledge and realization, then such a person Atma Bhuta, he realizes the Atma. And when he realizes the Atma, then Atma Anubhava Tushtatma, he becomes satisfied. And when he becomes satisfied, what is the result? Na Antarayair Vihanyase. That means he becomes the object of affection of everyone, including all the demigods. He becomes the object of affection of everyone, including all the demigods. That means he will not face, the demigods will not create any obstacles towards such a person. No obstacles will be created by a person, will be created by the demigods towards such a person who has achieved the realization and become satisfied. So we see Pradyan Maharaj writes here, a pure devotee of the Lord, he doesn't worship the demigods. Although he doesn't worship the demigods are never displeased with such a person. The demigods actually are very pleased with him, that's why they don't create any obstacles for such a person. In the Gita also Krishna speaks similar words that Yoga Yukto Vishuddhatma Vijitatma Jitendriyaha Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma Kurvan Apina Lipyate. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma means, says that one who is connected with me in yoga, one who is purified Vishuddhatma, he becomes dear to all living entities, and all living entities become dear to him. So Krishna is speaking this verse. So then, the next verse is a very beautiful verse. So then Krishna says, then when a person has achieved such a state, who has actually transcended thinking in terms of good and bad, who has transcended state thinking in terms of good and bad, as I explained in the, ninth or eighth verse. So how does such a person perform actions in this world? That means, if he has transcended the actions of good and bad, does it mean that he may break any rules or something? Sometimes we say, oh, this person is transcendental. So, does it mean, like, how does he actually perform the actions? So, that is explained in the 11th verse. దోషబుద్ధ్యోపయాతీతో నిషేధాన్న నివర్తతే గుణబుద్ధ్యా చ విహితం న కరోతి యతార్బకః.
A self-realized person does this spontaneously, like an innocent child, not because he is thinking in terms of material good and evil.
So here, Krishna says, when a person has transcended this good and bad, such a person, he spontaneously performs the right actions and spontaneously, naturally avoids the wrong actions. So it is not that a transcendental person acts whimsically. He follows the rules and regulations of the scriptures, but he does it spontaneously but not intellectually. One who is not transcended, he intellectually thinks that, oh, I am getting this temptation but I should not do this. So with intelligence he tries to avoid the bad action and he performs the good action. But one who is transcended, he spontaneously, naturally performs the right and wrong actions. It's like, I think yesterday, Nada Gopinathra also mentioned that change of habits, unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence. Initially, a person unconsciously performing wrong actions. Or we can say, another way to say is that, that hopeless defeat, he is hopelessly getting defeated in the different temptations against Maya. The second stage is that conscious incompetence. Means like, he is not able to avoid the bad actions, but at least he is aware that, oh, I am doing the wrong actions. In unconscious incompetence, a person is not even aware that he feels that, oh, this is actually the right thing. There is no feeling of guilt or regret. Then conscious incompetence, or we can say he is struggling but he gets defeated. Hopeless defeat, and the next is struggle but he gets defeated. And the next stage is that then a person performs sadhana bhakti. That stage is called as conscious competence, or struggle and success. Consciously is making the right choice and avoiding the wrong choice. He is struggling, and with great struggle he actually attained success. That is sadhana bhakti practitioner. And then the fourth stage is unconscious competence. It is like naturally he is performing the right actions, or effortless success. This is a stage of like raga bhakti, raganuga bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service. So in one sense Krishna is talking about this particular point, and he is giving an analogy of a child. He says that usually children are considered innocent, and he says childlike means a person is innocent. Childish means frivolous. So Krishna is saying, yes, a transcendental person, one who is transcendent the good and bad action, he is childlike. So like child, he naturally performs the right thing and avoids the wrong thing. In that sense, he naturally chooses the good action and avoids the wrong action. So this is the actual important point. The Kritiyan Maharaj also talks about Vaidhi Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. So sometimes it is mentioned, like Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, that Raganuga devotees do not follow the regulative principles of devotional service very strictly. But by spontaneous nature, they become attracted to some of the eternal residents of Vrindavan. So he is mentioning that they do not follow the regulative principles very strictly. But actually, when Prabhupada is mentioning that, he does not mean that a Raganuga Bhakta performs, he does not follow the rules and regulations. A Raganuga Bhakta, he spontaneously chooses the right actions and avoids the wrong actions. He spontaneously knows that it is not, sometimes we think a person who has reached the Raganuga stage means he does not have to follow any authority. He does not come under any authority or things like that. No, that is not the actually real understanding. In the stage of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we perform devotional service based on the inspiration from the Guru and the scriptures, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But in the Raganuga stage, it is not that he is not under any of these authorities. He spontaneously knows the desire of the authorities and performs the actions. He spontaneously knows what they desire and performs those actions. So that is why Shishoram Maharaj says that he quotes a verse from Bhakti Sandarbha. The state of being an unalloyed devotee of the Lord is attained by having faith in devotional service. A person attached to the Lord naturally respects the rules and regulations described in the scriptures. Attraction to the Lord is very rare. A person who has no respect for the rules and regulations of the scriptures and yet thinks himself as an unalloyed devotee is merely a proud hypocrite. So in that sense, a transcendental person, he naturally follows the rules. That's what actually Krishna is explaining this verse. So in the sattva guna, a person consciously performs the pious actions and avoids the impious. But in shuddha sattva, which is being talked about here, he spontaneously performs the pious and avoids the impious. So now, in the 12th verse, Krishna says that such a person, he never again falls down. One who is transcended, he never again falls down. He says, Sarva Bhuta Sukrit Shanto Jnana Vijnana Nishchaya Pashyan Madatmakam Vishnum Na Vipadyate Vaipunaka. Such a person, he has a benevolent intention towards everyone. Sarva Bhuta Sukrit Shanto. He has a attitude of having welfare attitude towards everyone. And Jnana Vijnana Nishchaya. He has a devotional vision because of his knowledge and realization. And such a person, na vipadyeta vaipunaka, he never again falls down.
Jnana Vijnana is always repeated, right? Gita also.
Knowledge and transcendental realization.
Jnana Vijnana Trittatma. It's very important.
So now when Krishna has given, once Krishna has given the first set of instructions to Uddhava. So now Uddhava will actually ask some questions and then Krishna will actually continue. So now this section is a very beautiful section. Shri Shuka Uvacha,
Shri Shuka Uvacha,
Ityadishto Bhagavata,
Ityadishto Bhagavata,
Mahabhagavato Nripa,
Mahabhagavato Nripa,
Uddhava Pranipatyaha,
Uddhava Pranipatyaha,
Tattvam Jigyasu Rachyutam,
Tattvam Jigyasu Rachyutam.
Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, thus instructed his pure devotee Uddhava, who was eager to receive the knowledge from the Lord. Uddhava then offered obeisances to the Lord and spoke as follows.
So Uddhava is actually, he asks further question, Tattvam Jigyashu Rachyutam. So Uddhava is asking these questions for the purpose of deepening his understanding about Krishna in order to actually advance in his loving service. He is not asking these questions for just to get some increase his knowledge or just to get some intellectual satisfaction. So Vishnu Chakotaku Prabhupada says that a pure devotee is not eager to acquire knowledge for personal gratification. So knowledge about Krishna is not simply to, like, there is a, like, when a person knows anything about any subject matter, it is a little impressive. So similarly, generally, sometimes people have this attitude, and when they come to spiritual life also, they come with this attitude in order to get more and more spiritual knowledge. But the purpose of spiritual knowledge is not for pooling, but for pulling ourselves towards Krishna. And Krishna says that, Aham sarvasya prabhu matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam. An intelligent person who understands that and the source of everything, he actually worships me with the feeling of his heart. The purpose of knowledge is not simply to increase, to get some intellectual satisfaction. If a, when a person has that attitude, the heart will be very dry. Will not feel some genuine satisfaction in our heart. The heart will be very dry. But the purpose of spiritual knowledge to actually, to, so that we get more attracted towards Krishna. So, when a person has the attitude of simply acquiring more knowledge, he is like a Jnana Mishra Bhakta. Jnana Mishra Bhakta is more concerned with getting knowledge than for serving Krishna. So, and another thing we see is that Uddhava is wanting this knowledge, and he is also, he is offering obeisances, and he is actually, the submissive mood is inquiry. So, the inquiry, that is why when, if we see in the Gita itself, and Dhritarashtra also, he inquired from Sanjaya. And, but then he didn't undergo any transformation. But Dhritarashtra's inquiry from Sanjaya, it is like more asking like a news report. So there is no the mood of submissiveness or service attitude. But in the case of Arjuna, he was completely transformed. So there is a submissiveness and inquiries. And so Krishna is placing, and he says that Tadviddhi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya. He is actually mentioning Pranipata even before Pariprashna. Submissiveness before actually inquiry. So next verse. So he glorifies Krishna from 14th to 18th verse. He is putting forward his inquiry in the 14th and 15th verse. After putting forward his inquiry, then he is making a request. He is putting forward his inquiry in 14th, 15th and 16th verse, in 3 verses. And then after putting forward his inquiry, and in 17th and 18th verse, he actually glorifies Krishna. Shri Uddhava Uvacha,
Shri Uddhava Uvacha,
Yogesha Yoga Vinyasa,
Yogesha Yoga Vinyasa,
Yogatman Yoga Sambhava,
Yogatman Yoga Sambhava,
Nishreyasaya Me Proktas,
Nishreyasaya Me Proktas,
Tyaga Sanyasa Lakshanaha,
Tyaga Sanyasa Lakshanaha.
Shri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, you alone award the results of yoga practice, and you are so kind that by your own influence you distribute the perfection of yoga to your devotee. Thus you are the Supreme Soul who is realized through yoga, and it is you who are the origin of all mystic power. For my supreme benefit, you have explained the procedure of giving up the material world through the process of sannyasa or renunciation."
So here, Krishna, Uddhava is addressing Krishna by 4 words, Yogesha. So it has 2 meanings. One meaning is that Yoga Isha, O master of all types of yoga. Or another meaning is that one who awards the results of all types of yoga. You alone award the results of all types of yoga. Yogesha, Yoga Vinyasa. Yoga Vinyasa means, it can mean that, O teacher of Jnana Yoga. Another meaning is that, you are so kind that by your own influence, you distribute the perfection of yoga to your devotee. or one will distribute the perfection of yoga to his devotee, that is yoga vinyasa. The third word is yogatma, means you are the supreme soul who is realized through yoga. Or in particular, this word also means that one who makes his appearance through bhakti yoga. Yogatma means one can be realized through bhakti yoga. And yoga sambhava means, yogatma means one who is the embodiment of all yogas. Or it means that the super soul who is realized through yoga. And then yoga sambhava means, one meaning is that one who is the origin of all mystic power, or one who makes his appearance through bhakti yoga. So he is saying that you have explained the process of renunciation, but then those people who are attached to sense enjoyment, like for them, the path of renunciation which you have explained, it is very difficult to perform. For those people who have attached sense enjoyment, and for those people who do not have any devotion to you, the path of renunciation is very difficult to perform, which you have explained to me. Which he explains in the next verse. So that means, when a person performs devotional service, then renunciation, which is dushkara, it is difficult to perform, it becomes easy, sulabha, and it also becomes susukam, it becomes, one can perform with great joy. And then in the 16th verse, Krishna is actually asking Uddhava is asking Krishna that actually I am most foolish because my consciousness has been merged in material body and bodily relations, which are all manufactured by your illusory energy. So therefore, I am just thinking in terms of only me and mine. Therefore, you should please instruct your poor servant, Samsadayami Bhagavan. And you must tell me how I can easily carry out your instructions. So, the first 13 verses and the first 12 verses, Krishna has explained about the process of renunciation. So now Uddhava is saying, this actually process is very difficult to perform for those who are attached to sense gratification, those who do not have devotion to you. Therefore, you please explain that how we can easily carry out your instructions. So we can see one thing, that when Uddhava is asking questions, he is asking questions and he is also asking the right mood. So Prabhupada writes in a purport that in the first canto, when a person goes to a saintly person, one should know what questions to ask. And even if a person knows what questions to ask, if a person is not in the right mood, then if a person is not having the right mood of submissiveness, then also there is no use of asking questions. So one is asking the right questions and having the right mood. This is from the point of view of the inquirer. And from the point of view of the one who is speaker, one should enlighten a person, but at the same time the enlightenment should be actually encouraging to the person. So enlightenment without encouragement, it is useless. The person is having the right knowledge, but then he doesn't feel the confidence that I can also practice this bhakti, I should take up this process, then that enlightenment is not inspiring him to take up the process, and it's of no use. And there are many organizations who actually encourage people. They speak very goody-goody words, but there is no actual philosophy. Encouragement without enlightenment, that is also useless. So similarly, like that is from the point of view of a teacher, from the point of view of a student also, right question but also having the right mood. So if you see, Uddhava is asking the right questions, but he is also saying that actually I am absorbed in the conceptions of me and mine. So therefore you please instruct your poor servant as how I can easily carry out your instructions. So Uddhava is identifying himself as one of an ordinary conditioned soul. So here Hridayan Maharaj says that Uddhava is having the attitude of repentance. So he says that such a repentant, eager mentality is most auspicious for spiritual advancement. It's most auspicious for spiritual advancement. The Lord certainly answers the prayers of a repentant devotee desperate to escape the clutches of illusion. So next verse. Satyasya te swadrisha atmana atmanonyam.
Satyasya te swadrisha atmana atmanonyam.
Vaktaramisha vibhudeshapinanu chakshe.
Vaktaramisha vibhudeshapinanu chakshe.
Sarve vimohita diyastava maya yeme.
Sarve vimohita diyastava maya yeme.
Brahmadayastanubruto bahirartha bhava.
Brahmadayastanubruto bahirartha bhava.
My dear Lord, you are the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, and you reveal yourself to your devotees. Beside your lordship, I do not see anyone who can actually explain perfect knowledge to me. Such a perfect teacher is not to be found even among the demigods in heaven. Indeed, all of the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are bewildered by your illusory potency. They are conditioned souls who accept their own material bodies and bodily expansion to be the highest truth.
So here he is asking Krishna that please explain how your poor servant can easily follow your instructions. Then Krishna may say that why don't you ask maybe other sages or other demigods? They can explain to you. So Uddhava is saying here, actually you are the best among all the teachers. Nobody else can explain better than you. So he is expressing his full confidence in Krishna by saying that Vaktaram Isha Vibhudesh Api Na Anuchakshe. I do not see anybody even among the demigods who is better than you. Vakta means the speaker or teacher. You are the best among all the teachers. And he gives three qualities of the Lord. By this word Satyasya. By saying Satyasya, he says, you are the cause of all existence in time and space. Or you are the one who gives benefit to the devotee, Satyasya. And then by using the word Swadrisha, he says, you have knowledge of me, so therefore you can speak to me. You know what is actually, you know my condition, you have knowledge of my shortcomings and everything, so therefore you can speak to me. Others may not have that knowledge. They are not the cause of all existence. And third thing is that Atmano Anyam. You are the Paramatma different from me. You are the Supreme Soul who is actually different from me. So therefore you can actually speak to me. So in that sense we see here basically this verse also establishes how Krishna is superior to all the demigods. So many many of the Abrahamic religions, they criticize the Vedic scriptures by saying Vedic scriptures are polytheistic. They say there are so many gods in Hinduism, what kind of religion it is. They criticize based on this idea, like there are so many gods are there. But actually we see that Vedic traditions are, Vedas are actually monotheistic. The Vedas are They are conclusively monotheistic, but not exclusively monotheistic. It means, in conclusion, Vedas are telling only to surrender to one Supreme Lord. To Krishna or Vishnu, Sarvadharman, Parityajivami. Conclusively, they are monotheistic. But they are not exclusively monotheistic. In the sense, the Vedas are, they say that undivided or unalloyed devotion to that Supreme Lord is the goal of all the religious practice. In the sense, they are monotheistic. But then, they are not making that unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord as the entry level qualification for entering religion. Like if they make that as the entry level qualification, then nobody will actually be able to enter this. Unless you are a pure devotee, you cannot come to this path. It's very difficult for many people to enter. So the Vedas are, they are conclusively monotheistic but not exclusively monotheistic. That means that in conclusion they say one should only surrender to that Supreme Lord. But not exclusively monotheistic in the sense that, okay, you don't want to worship me, you don't want to worship Krishna. Okay, you can worship some other demigod, maybe Ganesh or Shiva or Brahma or Kartikeya, whichever demigod more you please. But at least accept some authority, Vedic authority. So by that, Krishna is not trying to force people, oh, if you don't worship me, then you have no other chance. So Krishna is, like the system of demigod worship is that it shows that how Krishna is making himself available any person who wants to actually, to any person who may not want to worship him. So it shows his actually, his concern for the individuality of the worshipper, and it shows the unparalleled flexibility of Krishna in making himself accessible. It shows his concern for the people, that it shows his concern for the individuality of the person. Okay, you want to get attracted to some ghastly form, okay, you get worship maybe some Kali or something. Yeah, he sees the individuality of the person, and then Vedas are actually recommending some particular form which will actually attract him. And it also shows how the Supreme Lord is, he is so flexible in making himself accessible to any person. So that is the demigod, this one. But here, Uddhava is saying that there is nobody who can be a better teacher. Because all the demigods are, why he is not choosing the demigods? Sarve vimohita diyas tava maya yeme. All of them are under your illusory potency. Brahma daya, Brahma and others, they are in the bodily conception, tanubruto. And then bahir artha bhava, they are always thinking in terms of bahir artha bhava, they are always thinking in terms of external things, me and mine. So we see the Gita also. See, we will see many parallels between Bhagavad Gita and Uddhav Gita. Sometimes when there is time, I will mention that. But Gita also, Arjuna mentioned similarly, right in the second chapter, he says, Nahi prapashyami mama panudyat yachoka muchoshan mindriyana. There he says, Nahi prapashyami. Na pashyami means see. Na pashyami means I do not see. I do not. Prapashyami means, the meaning is more enhanced. So it says, Nahi prapashyami means, there also when Arjuna is surrendering to Krishna, Krishna is saying that, why don't you approach Brihaspati and take knowledge from him? Why are you actually approaching me? So therefore, Arjuna is using the word prapashyami, na prapashyami. That means, I do not see even one person at all in all the three worlds except you who can remove my sorrow. I do not see even one person in the entire, all the three planetary systems except you who can remove my sorrow. Similar mode, exactly similar mode, Uddhava is saying that na anuchakshe, I do not see anybody. All the demigods are under your illusory potency. Even in the 6th chapter, and Arjuna says that Yetan me samshayam Krishna chettum na upapadyate tvadanyas samshayasyasya chetta na upapadyate tvad anya. I have this doubt about Krishna. Arjuna is asking that how can the incomplete yogi, what the destination of such an incomplete yogi, imperfect yogi. And again when Arjuna is asking the doubt, he is saying that tvad anya samshayasya, except for you, nobody else can remove this doubt. There also Krishna is giving the suggestion, why don't you ask this doubt to somebody else? So similarly Uddhava is also having the similar mood. So Prabhupada writes here that demigods become conditioned to think in terms of material good and bad, and therefore they accept the immediate welfare of their bodies to be the highest goal of life. But although they see in terms of good and bad, at least they try to follow the laws of God. Therefore the Supreme Lord descends to remain the heavenly beings of His own Supreme Personality. So next verse is a very important verse. The next verse, Uddhava is giving many more attributes of Krishna for why he is actually surrendering to Krishna. And then Krishna starts speaking. So we'll recite this verse together.
Tasmat Bhavantamanavadyamanantaparam Sarvajnam Ishvaramakundalikundalishyam
Therefore, O Lord, feeling weary of material life and tormented by its distresses, I now surrender unto you, because you are the perfect master. You are the unlimited, all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose spiritual abode in Vaikuntha is free from all disturbances. In fact, you are known as Narayana, the true friend of all living beings.
So this verse, Uddhava is saying, why Krishna is the perfect master? Of course, he explained, he gave one reason, the previous verse, saying that all the demigods are under the three modes. But here he gives 8 characteristics of Krishna in this verse, why Krishna is a perfect master. First he says, Tasmat Bhavantam Anavadyam, you are faultless. So in this world, when we establish a relationship with a particular person, initially that person may appear to be a perfect person. But after some time, we actually see the faults in that particular person. On the other hand, Krishna consciousness initially may appear to be filled with faults, or one may have so many doubts about why should I follow this path. But as a person comes close to Krishna, one understands that Krishna is actually absolutely faultless, anavadyam. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur says that somebody may have all good qualities, but he may have bad conduct. But Krishna is anavadyam, means he is irreproachable in conduct. There is a verse in the 5th canto about Lord Ram. It's explained that Sadhu Vada Vikashanaya. Like Lord Ram is like a stone which is used to, is like a gold testing stone. Used to test the good qualities. It's like a gold testing stone. It is used to actually test the pure, whether something is a real gold or a duplicate gold. You rub against the gold testing stone, you will find out. So similarly, it is said Lord Ram is like the gold testing stone, in the sense that a quality, whether, if you want to know whether a quality is good quality or bad quality, you place that quality on Lord Ram. By that you can find out whether it is a good quality or bad quality. Means like, it is, the concept is that it is not that Krishna is all good because he has so and so qualities. So Krishna is all good even without those qualities. Rupa Goswami gives 64 qualities of Krishna. So it is not that, oh, because he has 64 qualities, oh, Krishna is all good, he is the Supreme Lord. No, Krishna is all good even without those qualities. Those qualities become glorious because of coming in contact with Krishna. So, nice to understand. So, that's what anavadyam means. He is irreproachable in conduct. And the second quality is anantaparam. Anantaparam means is beyond time and space. In this world, a servant may serve the master, but then when it comes to reward, the master may die. So he may not be able to reward the servant. Or the servant may die before he gets the reward. Like I give this example of somebody dies in a railway accident or something. The government can only reward the family members of the particular person. The government cannot reward by finding out which species has taken birth and then reward that person. So because the masters of this world, they are limited by time and space. So Ananta Param means Krishna is actually beyond time and space. And the third quality is that Sarvagyam, that means he is all knowing. This one servant may serve the master, but the master may not know the troubles undergone by the servant. The person is working in a project, software project, has a deadline is there, but somehow they are not able to complete in the deadline. They worked hard. The master may not understand, oh, he has worked so hard, he may not be aware of this. That the hard work he has put, he only sees, oh, he has not completed in deadline. So, but in the case of Krishna, he is sarvagyam, omniscient. But when we see in here that Krishna is all knowing, one may think that, oh, that means that Krishna will know all my faults. No, Krishna does not remember the faults of his devotees, but only the sincere service they have rendered. Means like Krishna uses his omniscience in order to improve the disposition of his devotees. Krishna uses his omniscience in order to actually benefit the devotees. He uses omniscience for his for the benevolence of his devotees. And then the fourth quality is that Ishwaram. It means like he has the ability to give protection to people. He has the ability to give protection. The other masters, even they have the right attitude of Sarvagyam, Anantaparam, except they may not have the ability to give protection. And the fifth quality is Akunta Vikunta Dishnyam. That means when a person worships the Lord, Krishna takes that person to the spiritual world. Means like Krishna shares his own opulences to the servant. He shares his own opulences to the servant. Like here we have like servant quarters and master lives in a particular bungalow. Servant uniform for the servants and master has a different set of clothes. But Krishna shares his own bodily features. He shares his own abode. This is the fifth quality Uddhava mentions. And then he says regarding the sixth quality, Uddhava is describing his personal situation as Nirvinnadi and Vrijanabhi Tipto. Vrijanabhi Tipto and Nirvinnadi means, he says that I am completely exhausted and discouraged by the contradictions and anguish of material life. Therefore, I have been forced to become humble and surrender to the lotus feet of you. Means like, the sixth quality is that Krishna can give relief from all the contradictions and anguish of material life. So Krishna, Uddhava is not only glorifying Krishna in different ways, he is also putting forward his personal situation as Nirvinnadi and Vrijanabhi Taptu. And the seventh and eighth quality are very beautiful. this Narayanam Narasakam. Narayanam means, says that you are so great that you can give shelter to Lord Narayan. Here the word Narayan means Krishna, who can give shelter to Narayan. And although he is so great, but he is also Narasakam, who is actually, he is an infinitesimal friend of a living entity. Usually a great person does not have time for an insignificant person. But Krishna is so great that he can give shelter to Lord Narayan, but he also is a friend of an infinitesimal living entity. So in this way, Uddhava is actually giving all these reasons for why he wants to surrender. We'll say the next verse together. Prayena manujaloke loka tatva vijakshana samudharanti atmanam atmanaiva shubhashayat.
The Supreme Lord replied, generally those human beings who can expertly analyze the actual situation of the material world are able to raise themselves beyond the inauspicious life of gross material gratification.
So this is, I want to concentrate on like the next 2-3 verses. These are very important. So Krishna is saying here, prayena manuja loke. Generally, manuja, those human beings, loka tattva vijakshana. Vijakshana means those who are expert, those who know expertly the loka tattva, the actual situation of the material world. Such people, samuddharanti, they can actually deliver themselves by what? Atmanam, by their own intelligence. And atmanaiva ashubhashaya. And they can deliver themselves from the inauspicious attitude of desiring ashubha ashaya, desiring sense gratification, by using their own intelligence. So this is an important verse, because Krishna is actually telling us to take the initiative. He is saying that you can use your own intelligence. The expert people, they use their own intelligence to actually deliver themselves. So Krishna is asking Uddhava to take the initiative. He is asking all of us to take the initiative to use our own intelligence. Apparently, this verse may not appear devotional. Devotional means like devotional verses are something like, oh, everything is dependent on the mercy of the Lord or the spiritual master, surrender to the spiritual master, etc. But here Krishna is saying, use your own intelligence. So that means, like many times we talk about the principle of obeying the spiritual master, the superiors and authorities. But many times in trying to explain that principle, the principle of taking our own initiative from our side, that principle may get lost. In the process of emphasizing on like obeying the superiors, the principle of taking our own initiative, that may get lost. So if you remember, Prabhupada also says that one has to fly one's own plane. One will have to take instruction of the spiritual master on the ground level. Once a person goes the air, that you are all alone actually. So you have to use your intelligence, take the initiative based upon what you have heard. So in that sense, that scriptures appeal to our intelligence and we have to take the initiative. Krishna also explains in the Gita that evam buddhe para buddhva samshabhyatmana matmana jahi shatrum mahabahu kamarubam trana. Evam buddhe, with your intelligence you should actually conquer lust. So in that sense, like when we see, to understand that the material world is miserable, for that you do not need a guru or scriptures. We can understand with our own intelligence also. Because when it is mentioned that tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva abhigachet, so the word tad, you must approach a guru in order to get spiritual knowledge which is beyond the three material world. That means a person is already having the understanding that even before going to the guru, a person is having the understanding that the material world is miserable. So if a person has a sober intelligence, if he has a uses the intelligence, right intelligence using his higher nature, then he can actually come to the understanding that the material world is miserable. And he can understand even Atma and also Paramatma. But only the Supreme Personality of Godhead you cannot understand for your own. You will see the verses which I explained that. We'll see that. So that means knowledge of the so I will we'll just go through this verses and then we'll just 12:35. So here just one may say, when Krishna is saying that use your intelligence, he does not mean that he is not like discouraging us to not approach a guru. He is not discouraging that, because if he is actually rejecting the principle of approaching guru, then Krishna would not have accepted the surrender of Uddhava. So Uddhava has accepted Krishna as the guru. So when Krishna is saying use your intelligence, by that he is not telling that oh, there is no need of a guru. If he had meant that, then he would have actually chastised Uddhava, why are you accepting me as a guru, there is no need of a guru, he would have said. No, the point is that within the context of taking shelter of a guru, there is also the principle of taking our own initiative. Like once Prabhupada came to one place in London, different ISKCON leaders, they came to meet Prabhupada, and they were giving different reports of Prabhupada about their services. There was one devotee, simple devotee called Ishan Prabhu, he came to meet Prabhupada. So Prabhupada asked, he came and asked Prabhupada that what service can I do for you, Srila Prabhupada? Please tell me what service I can do. So Prabhupada told the devotee, you tell me what you can do for Krishna. And the devotee again asked that, Prabhupada, you please tell me that what service, you give me instruction what I can do for you. And Prabhupada again said, no, you tell me what you can do for Krishna. And then he went back, and then after one day he came, and then he said that, so I can make nice mridangas which will not break. And then he came and told this to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yeah, very good. You are the leaders, they are very passionate in doing their kirtan. You make such kirtan, such mridanga which will not break. It's like Prabhupada, this pastime tells that Prabhupada is actually asking us to take the initiative. So everyone has a different skill, has a particular nature, this one. One should actually think like what services we can render according to our skill, and then we can present that to the superiors, and then with their blessings we can do that service. So that means taking our own initiative is important. So here Jiva Goswami says that the knowledge acquired by one's own perception and intelligence leads one to appreciate the value of a bona fide.